Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 48 of the Business Handmade podcast.
I'm Kim.
And I'm Kevin. You didn't welcome. Laugh that time.
I know, because I'm trying not to be predictable, like every other time. Now you're laughing.
We played back one of the podcasts, and Kim was like, oh, I laugh every time. Every time that I introduce myself and we say our names, I always laugh.
Every single time. So, I don't know why it's not. I don't know. Is it funny? Is it nerves? I don't know.
It's just like you're getting into character.
Into character. You know, I feel like I'm just my goofy self.
Yeah. So we have been working hard.
We have. And you know, it's really crazy because like probably so many of you, I felt kind of like bah humbug about this year. Like I don't even know what to expect. I felt like not like things would be hopeless, but
like
just
a
not,
slump.
Yeah, kind of like a slump, like not my usual optimistic self. I was kind of like, eh, what are we going to have like 4 events this year because everything is being canceled and, you know, just getting down on myself. And then,
no, it was because last year we scheduled the entire year like by February.
Yeah.
So then we had to like kind of go back and reschedule and cancel a lot of things just because last year was so unpredictable.
But we're obviously being very intentional this year because only certain things are allowed. And even if things, let's just say tomorrow, they all turned around and opened up again, people mm-hmm. are not going to be readily comfortable to do those things. So,
well, we know what we know now.
Taking it slow.
However,
but that being said,
yeah.
Within the last 3 days, our calendar has been like, we're just packing it with events that we know will be safe and can be done outdoors. So if you've been following us over the years, you probably can figure which of those venues we'll be able to work with this year.
And thank you so much to the 10 or 15 people that messaged us saying, hey, are you doing any events this year? I don't see anything on your website. That really makes us feel good because we know people are kind of expecting things that are coming from us and
they know us
are in
by
our
now.
Side, you know?
They know us by now. They know that we're organized and
they're
we generally
excited.
Have it all done. And it's not that we're dropping the ball with regard to organization or trying to get it done. We're still working on those contracts, but there's just like added layers of things to think about and working with our venues and are they allowed to, and is it a contact at a specific town or, mm-hmm. you know, municipality or whatever, where they have to follow certain guidelines and what's our involvement with the health department, et cetera. So it's really kind of a lot more involved, but.
And we're not really that late because usually we'll have like the last weekend in March, we'll have an indoor show and then we'll go from there. And I think we're planning things about mid-April we'll start.
Yeah.
Because obviously we want things safe and outdoors and not too cold. Maybe we will stay away from rainy season, like things like that. So we're definitely going to be putting things on the website in the next maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah. So we're doing our best to get everything up and running. Some of your favorite events that we've done successfully outdoors over the last couple of years will still be happening. It's just a matter of us ironing out details, you know, especially some of those that were like way better attended than we even anticipated. Not, you know, it's
we were surprised
tricky.
Last year.
It's tricky during COVID because you always want good attendance. But you have to be cautious, especially in a pandemic. So it's a matter of like, oh, well, more people showed up to that than we thought would. And so now we have to be like anticipating that number of people and kind of adjust accordingly. But it is all in the works within, like Kevin said, within the next couple of weeks, you'll see all the applications open. Red Mill applications will be open. So you can apply to that if you're interested.
They're actually open already. If you go to our site, you can apply. We haven't told people other than the people that have vended in the past.
I didn't know if we were letting out the secret, but I guess our podcast
friends can know that those are open right now. Obviously, we're not doing any acceptances yet, but we're doing a pre-application, basically.
Yeah, yep. So if you're interested at all in Winter Village at the Red Mill Museum, those applications are open. And then all the other outdoor events throughout the year will follow.
Thanks for listening to us talk through this live.
There's no script, except for that first episode when you had a script and I said, where's my script?
Well, we're almost at episode 50 and there will be a script for that.
Will there?
It'll be a special episode 50 with a script.
With a script and a cake.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
A brownie, maybe. I don't know.
All right. I have to prep for that.
We're going to have a party. We're going to live stream it so you can watch us on camera.
We should. That was fun that one time we did that.
Yeah.
Anywho, Thank you for listening to episode 48. This episode was with Amazing Essence.
Yeah, Adrian is an amazing female small business owner. And she shared so much information, like more than I would have even thought to ask her.
Mm-hmm.
She's very organized. She has a whole system to how she runs things.
Yep.
She has a checklist of criteria for finding your brick and mortar space. She has a checklist of criteria for whether or not she should do shows. And she has a graph and she shares it
mm-hmm.
with other makers at shows. You know, when she runs into them, she'll share historical data from other shows. She has information on, you know, payments and afterpay and marketing and serving your customers. Just really amazing. Right as we were saying our goodbye, I turned to Kevin and mouthed, I love her. Because I love the organization. And I think the things that she shared are just almost beyond what makers typically think about, you know,
because it's just idea generating. You know, if I was a maker and I was listening to this podcast,
well, you've been a maker.
I know, but if I had a podcast back then, you know, all those years ago, and I was just listening in on her experience, I feel like my mind would just be firing of like, oh, that's a good idea, or oh, I could take that a step further, or oh, I can modify that for myself.
Yeah, like how does that work for me yeah. in my town and where I am? And you know, back when Kevin and I were the makers, we were like small potatoes. We didn't grow the business. I mean, it grew. Don't get me wrong. We were shocked by the amount of growth that we had.
But we didn't intentionally grow things through social media. Like
it was just tried and true methods. Local and word of mouth.
Yeah. There was no podcast really to listen to. There wasn't like.
And then those tried and true people in
social media ads.
We had a following in Washington State. It was like the most bizarre thing that here we are in New Jersey and our most recurrent customers were out on the West Coast.
Yeah, shipping those 6-foot wooden rulers that did not fold was always fun.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. Other than those people that would tell every friend they had, and we would send, they all told us they were referred by so-and-so.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Other than those people, we were very word-of-mouth based here in New Jersey. So the tips that Adrian shares, though, really do apply, you know, and it's something where you can sit and say, hey, you know, why didn't I think to survey 75 of my closest friends and family about the most basic stuff, you know, before she even
got started. About my business name, yeah.
Before she even got started. And she talks about, like, you know, making sure that you're insured and making sure that you filed the paperwork with your state. It may not seem like a big deal, but trust me, you don't want to be on the other end of a lawsuit or someone else using your name. So it's really important that if you're doing this, you've got to do it right. So she gives advice on all of that. We talked about not letting other people hold you back from your passion and your vision for your business. And the truth is, other people just don't get it. They don't see what you see. And so you can't let that hinder you in your growth or, you know, even just getting started. What else did we talk about?
So much stuff. You'll just have to listen to the episode.
You will.
But this is why I get so energized by the podcast, because we've never met Adrian. We've only spoken through email. She was referred to us by one of our other maker friends. And she signed up for Shop Our Makers. So that's really all we knew going into the conversation.
Yeah.
And then that's why you turned to me saying like, oh, I love her, is because we're generating like a brand new relationship with somebody that we will meet eventually, but we haven't had that in-person right. conversation yet. So it's so nice just talking about what we're passionate about
yeah.
and just having that be enough
it's for the organic conversation. And
yeah.
It's organic. And honestly, that's kind of one of the topics we talked about too, is like, you know, you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea,
mm-hmm.
but when you start realizing that not everyone's for you and you're not for everyone, you have a different vibe and you start attracting people that want in, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you start to lose sight of those disappointments and what it felt like when you weren't someone's cup of tea, because you start to realize you are so many other people's cup of tea. And here we are meeting someone like Adrian virtually. We've never met her in person, but we met her through a maker who has become a near and dear friend of ours. And I like to think that all of our makers become near mm-hmm. and dear friends, because truthfully, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have them in contact. You know, like
right.
when I scroll through our Instagram page and I look at the messages and I look at the comments and the stories and people replying to things, I see that person for their name, not their business name. And I think of like our last interaction with them. And
yeah.
unfortunately, a lot of those were before COVID, but it's like, wow, where would I be if I didn't know that person?
Exactly.
So anyway, that was quite the tangent. I think Adrian has a ton of information for you. So you're going to need a notebook. I think we say this a lot of episodes.
We've been saying it a lot. Yeah.
We've been really fortunate to meet people and interview people that truly have a lot of really good tips for small business. And they don't mind sharing it because collective success is still success for them. So
without further ado. And it is a community. It's a community of makers that are all working towards similar goals, and we can all help each other.
Absolutely. So without further ado, please enjoy Adrian of Amazing Essence.
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be a part of your podcast.
Awesome. Us too. So tell us about your business.
My name is Adrian McGill with Amazing Essence. I sell handcrafted 100% soy wax candles, wax melts, linen sprays, and rollerball essential oil perfumes.
I love it.
Very nice.
I love candles. I'm obsessed with fragrance. You're my kind of people.
Kim definitely gravitates more to the scents. When we're walking around a craft market, the first thing she goes to is the scents.
And then I don't leave them alone. But it's so cool. Like, I don't know, and I'm already getting us off topic, but, you know, it's just, I really am so in awe of people like yourself that make candles and just have this nose for fragrance and like the combinations and things like that. I would never on my own think to combine some of those and everything. Like, it's, you think like candle, like, oh yeah, everyone's got tons of candles, but really the makers that we meet put so much thought into everything from like, what container is it going to be in? What kind of wax am I going to use? What kind of wick am I going to use? What does the label look like? What does my line look like? And the whole thing, it's just so well packaged and beautiful. I love it so much.
Yes, with Amazing Essence, every day I would say it's a constant working process on what I can do to improve my products and make it more appealing for my customers.
Yeah. So what do you do to kind of research how you'd want to make small changes to your line, or like how do you figure out what's working really well and is kind of a staple in your line?
In regards to that question, I would say I get a lot of feedback from my customers. I'll randomly send them surveys. Whenever I'm vending, I'll also gauge them into questions in regards to what they will want to see Amazing Essence do. And I sort of kind of implement that feedback in addition to my own feedback in regards to improvements, and then I'll take it from there.
That's really smart. Wow. I mean, we talk about surveys and feedback all the time. And when we talk to some makers, maybe they're kind of new, we're surprised at how many don't really do like formal surveys. They'll get the word of mouth from their customers when they're in the moment, but actually sending something after the fact to gather feedback, I think, is so important.
I think it's important too. Whenever I first got started, I sent out a survey to about 75 people before I even hand selected scents or anything in regards to labeling containers. I sent the survey out and got feedback in regards to, I mean, like what scents they were interested in, their price points and so on and so forth, and sort of kind of took it from there.
Wow. So that was like right from the beginning before you even started making any products?
Yes. Before I even had a name.
That's awesome. I mean, you really had the foresight there to pull your audience and your customers. And even though you probably knew what you wanted to do, those nuances about how to do it or how it looked or what it smelled like, you had that input right from the beginning. So I think that's really cool.
I agree.
So yeah, how did
you? It's a strong foundation for your business too, and you're setting that precedent that like, listen, I really want to be here for your feedback, and I want to know what you think about the product. Mm-hmm. So doing that right from the get-go, I think that just kind of sets the stage for you to continually survey, and people are used to it. They're used to that communication. They get to meet you as the maker, you know, whether it was 75 of your closest friends and family, or maybe they passed it along to some other acquaintances of theirs that maybe you didn't know. People get to meet you as the maker and see how invested you really are in your product.
100%. So how did you get started? I mean, we're talking a little bit about you soliciting feedback right at the beginning. But tell us a little bit about that story.
So in 2013, the idea of making candles had came to me, and this is a little bit off of topic. The gentleman that I was seeing at the time, he swept it underneath the rug and he was like, you should focus on something that's going to make you a ton of money. Mm-hmm. So I sort of kind of let his influence steer me away from it. And then it came to me again in 2017. And when it came to me again in 2017, I was like, I can't pass this up again. Let me just do my research and just hit the ground running. And it was I've been living a dream of entrepreneurship ever since then, because I always had a dream of owning my own business and working solely for myself.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's so true. I think that happens a lot of the time, whether it's, you know, our parents, our friends, siblings, or significant others that don't, because they're not in it, they're not in your position. They don't feel the passion that you feel. And they're not, it's something that's so unknown to them that it feels like, well, you can't do that. That's not possible. And then we take that criticism to heart and it's like, well, wow, are they right? Maybe I should wait. Maybe I shouldn't do this. And then that's where the doubt comes in. But I'm so glad that you got back to it and did what you wanted to do, what your vision was. And it's so incredibly powerful to be a business owner, to be a female business owner, and to just be like, no, you know what? I had this vision and I'm going to make it happen.
It takes a lot of courage to actually get out there with a product and or service and try to get people engaged and build customers and long-term customer, returning customers. That's what I'm focused on now, trying to get all my customers. If you purchase from me one or two times, I want to be the brand that's constantly in your house.
Yeah. And how are you re-engaging them after you've sold to them, you know, once or twice?
I've been focusing on my email marketing, but I need to get pretty steady with it because now I'm sending an email maybe every few weeks, but I see that some businesses, they've sent out emails like once a day. I think that's a bit much, but I need to constantly re-engage with my audience all the time. I think email marketing is the easiest. I do see some businesses doing like the text thing to the customers. Yeah. I don't really feel comfortable doing that. So I think I want to stick to email marketing as of right now. I tried Facebook ads and Instagram ads. I didn't really see much conversion with those. So I think I'm just going to focus mainly on email marketing right now.
I think that's smart. You know, the text campaigns are definitely like kind of a fad and a lot of people are doing that. But I think we're also kind of unfortunately in this situation where because of the pandemic, there's like so many more spam calls. And I don't know about you, but we're personally on the do not call registry. We're still getting all of these spam calls. I think people are kind of sick of their phones right now. So I don't know. I get sick of the spam calls, the text messages and everything. So I think
you just got to be careful with that stuff. Yeah.
And email gives you the ability to put graphics and it feels like you can really make it look like a magazine, you know, where you don't really, you kind of lose that if you do it through text.
Yeah. I would have to agree with you on that as well.
Yeah.
I like the consistency though, you know, doing it every couple of weeks, people maybe come to expect, you know, maybe a coupon code is coming in their email or they get excited that maybe a new line is dropping for a certain season. Yeah. So having that consistency that they kind of know to expect maybe something is coming is exciting for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of my customers, they're always looking for, because even on Instagram, I'll do like a quick poll or they'll send me messages like, hey, you should do this or you should do that. So I have to take all of that into consideration when focusing on marketing and so on and so forth. But I think I want to steer clear from the text messaging a part of marketing as of right now.
I'm with you on that.
Definitely. So the one thing that I noticed when I was kind of looking at your website is that you have your own studio and it's a spot that you create and store your product and ship everything out. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and how it might have benefits to have everything kind of in one spot that is not your home?
I actually enjoy working out of my studio. It's much easier than when I was doing it out of my home, because I can have everything in like a centralized location. I'm able to keep track of my inventory. I'm able to create new blends. And when I'm in my studio, it like basically forces me to be in more of like a creative mode versus being at home and not just watching TV or maybe listening to music. Whenever I'm at the studio, I know I'm there for like a limited amount of time. So I try to maximize as much as I possibly can while I'm there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking that as you were saying, you know, having that designated space, you have to be really intentional about your time spent there. And the other good thing too is, like, I know in my, in our past when I was crafting and we had our Etsy shop, I'd have to pull all the supplies out, work on it, and then put all the supplies away. Yes,
that's
away.
The only downside of working out of your home.
Yes. Yeah. So having the studio, it's like, not that you're going to leave a big mess or anything, but you know where everything is. You can have stations set yep. up. You have your own organization and it doesn't interfere with your day to day. So it's like all in one place and you go there, you get the work done, and it's where you can be fun and be creative.
I think it's important to have a spot that you can really focus and limit the distractions, which is what you were saying. Because when you walk into that studio, you know, okay, I'm working now. I'm in work mode. And then you can go home and relax and not necessarily always have to think like, oh, there's my product right next to me. What should I be doing with that? It gives that separation a little bit from work and home.
Yeah, I would have to agree as well. Whenever I'm there, I try to tell people, please don't call me while I'm here because I need to focus on everything that I need to get done. Because when I'm on the phone, I notice I make a lot of mistakes and I'm forgetting to grab a product to maybe ship it. I think I did that last week rushing out of the studio. So I shipped the candle bowl without the wooden lid and I didn't realize it until after I dropped it in the self melon kiosk. Oh my gosh. I just forgot her wooden lid. So I had to go back to the studio, get another lid. And I think I gave her another candle just for the inconvenience as well. So when I'm there, I try to focus solely on Amazing Essence. So the process is seamless from beginning to end. So I don't have any hiccups.
It's consistent. Then they know what they're getting and it's so much a part of you. How did you come across your studio space? Were you looking for it for a while or was it something that kind of happened quickly and easily for you?
I want to say when I was approaching my second year, I kept saying to myself, I see myself like having my own creative space. So I started looking mm-hmm. on Craigslist. And the things that I was seeing on Craigslist, it was just like a little strange. So I said, let me go back to the drawing board. And then with the small business as well, like if you get into a triple net lease, you have to be careful with those because your rent can sometimes fluctuate. Sometimes it could be the amount that they told you. And then sometimes it can like triple. And I was like, I have to be mindful of that because I don't want to get in the habit of paying $300 for 6 months. And then by the seventh month, it's $600 or $900. So I found something that was within my price range, the utilities, the Wi-Fi, everything is included. There's cameras there. You can go in and out of the space 24 hours a day. I can have all my supplies shipped there. They have like a shipping mailing room, all that good stuff.
Oh, that's perfect.
And it's like very artsy. I wanted to be around other makers too, because I think whenever you're around other makers, that also creates more creativity and you guys can sort of kind of ping ideas off of other makers or other individuals.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's where we hear a lot of really cool stories. Like in South Jersey, I know there's a collaborative maker space and it's not just South Jersey. You know, there are different towns where someone will own a space and they kind of just make it like a giant studio for whoever wants to come in. Some of them have where you can like rent hourly or some are like, no, you know, you're renting this for the month, but you come and you have your designated space and it is a shared space. So you're there with other people. There's generally always someone in the building that can make sure like packages are signed for and that sort of thing. But I'm always fascinated to hear those stories of people who end up meeting other makers and then it opens a whole new world of possibility. Like you were saying, you know, pinging ideas off of one another or collaborating on something. I just think it's the coolest thing.
Yeah. I feel like being creative and being a maker kind of feeds off of those relationships and those ideas. It's hard to be like, you know, a solo maker and then shut off from everybody else.
Right.
You know, I think about the people that are just one owner of the business doing everything themselves. Then they go to a craft show and they're doing that all of themselves. Like you need to have an outlet where there are other people, other like-minded people that you can talk to and get ideas from and get feedback from.
Yeah. And I think I'm more productive whenever I am around other makers and other people that are creating, whether it's a painter or whether it's someone doing crafts. I feel like I'm more productive and I'm more in a creative space whenever I'm around other makers.
It's almost like accountability too.
Yeah.
Everybody's working on their craft. And if you look around and somebody's slacking off, you're like, hey, what's going on?
Because I noticed that if I'm just talking to like a regular friend and I'm trying to like ping ideas off of them, I'm like, I don't think they're giving me what I need. So I'll just save this for the people who are into creating because that's more of their lane.
Definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so great that, you know, makers have formed such a community. And it doesn't just span their county or their town. It's like people all throughout New Jersey or all throughout the tri-state area, they tend to run the same circuit where they end up at the same shows. You know, they've been following each other on social media for so long. And even in that way, you know, it's like having that network of people, but nothing beats seeing those people in person. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, during COVID, it's been like really difficult to connect with people, but it is nice to be able to have that studio space and know that there are other people, other creatives in that same area as you. Have you noticed that you've had any like any impacts because of COVID with regard to like being in that space with other makers? Do you feel like you've had to be kind of shut off from them a little bit?
No, the only downside is because this it's in like a industrial building. Mm-hmm. They did require the people, us that work there, they have studios there, and the people that are visiting us, you have to have on a mask. So that's the only mm-hmm. downside. But other than that, okay. everything with as in regards to having a space with COVID, I want to say it's pretty much the same, except for the mask aspect. Like, say if you're in your studio, but you have to run to the ladies' room, you have to have on your mask as soon as you leave yeah. your studio in order to walk down the hallway.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, though, because I feel like there are a lot of places that have either been closed or have put on a lot of restrictions. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you've been pretty much uninterrupted. It's been easier to kind of go into that space and do your thing like you've always been doing.
Yes. Yes, it has been.
Very good. I like that.
Do you ever have any opportunities for like having an open to the public workshop or sale or something in your studio, or is it not really built for that?
It sort of kind of is built for that because the, one of the entrances to my studio is like an off street. It's like on the street almost. So say if walk into the building, if you just turn to the left, my studio is the first studio to the left. So whenever it was open pre-COVID, I was having people swing by, but now everyone's pretty much there. They'll call me if they're outside, if they're picking up their order, or if I'm just shipping it or maybe dropping it off, I'll just put it in my car.
Very cool. I like that aspect where you can kind of be, you know, customer fronted as well.
Right. There's a lot more visibility, I think, if you're on ground level. Yeah. And you know, it's great that you still offer all the curbside, you know, pickup and things like that and shipping, but it's also just like extra eyes on you.
Yes, mm-hmm. it is.
Is there anything that you would tell kind of a new maker that kind of wanted to get into either a studio space like this? You know, what are the things that they should look out for? Like, is there a certain thing that was like a must have for you?
I want it to be, once again, around other creators. I would yep. say price point, you want to make sure that you can actually afford it. You don't want to just be breaking even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to be able to have a studio, you want to make sure it's in a good neighborhood. You want to make sure that it has like a shipping loading dock just in case you're doing like, just in case you're wholesaling products as well. And you have like right. big shipments and you need someone to come pick it up. You want to make sure they have a shipping loading dock. You want to make sure they have cameras. I would say try to get into a space that has most of your utilities included. Mm-hmm. I love natural lighting. that's a must.
That's so important for photography.
Yes, I love natural lighting. And that's about it.
That's like something that maybe you don't think of because you're going to be taking a lot of photos in that space too. You know, you have social media and website and you want to make sure that you don't have to bring your product somewhere else to take photos of it.
Right. That's probably not something you think of, but I love how Adrian was like, oh, that's about it. I'm like, well, that's a pretty expensive list. I think you're good. That's awesome advice. You know, one of the things we noticed when we were on your website is that you, and also that you have it on Instagram, is that you offer Afterpay. And I have seen this kind of popping up recently. Can you tell us more about that?
So with Afterpay, what it is your customers, basically, they would just make their purchase using the Afterpay. Well, they would, it's like I forgot how I set it up. I think I integrated Afterpay into my website. So whenever mm-hmm. you're checking out, there's an option to use Afterpay. So say if your order was like $200, you would only make an initial payment of $50, and then the remaining balance would be broken up over 3 installments. So basically it's like a buy now, you can buy it now, you can light it, but then you can pay for it over time.
So it's almost like financing or a credit card, but is there any kind of percentage that gets passed on to the customer?
No, I think for the customer, it's 100% free for them. So say if your order was like $200, it's just $200.
And then for you, do you absorb any cost on your end, any kind of transaction fee or like a percentage for accepting credit cards?
To be honest, I don't even think I think I had a couple customers pay with Afterpay, but I don't recall.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it wasn't anything significant then so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, not that I would notice.
It's such a cool concept because so many things are moving online right now, especially in the last like 12 to 16 months, that having the option for somebody to do Afterpay or do something like this is just, I never thought of it. You know, I never thought it could be something that a small business or a maker could do.
It makes perfect sense. When you think about like when people do their holiday shopping, mm-hmm. you know, they tend to go to the big box stores where they offer a store credit card or they offer some kind of discount if you open a store credit card or there's some incentive around it, right? So I think that almost discourages people from shopping small businesses because, you know, you go online, you go on Etsy, you go on Amazon Handmade or the maker's website, and there wasn't something like that before. So now it's like, okay, mm-hmm. well, you know, aside from, of course, they could use their own credit card, but this makes it more digestible. And also, as we're working with artists, some of the high-end people we work with, their price ranges could be several hundred, you know, upwards of thousands of dollars. And this does make it more attainable so that you can own that piece of art.
Yes, it does.
I really like it. Yeah, I think it's a very cool, innovative way to pay a little differently online.
Yeah, and one of my customers actually recommended that I start using Afterpay. She was like, you know what's missing from your website? She was like, Afterpay.
Well, that's, you know, and that's what you were saying earlier. You know, you're open to the feedback. Yep. And if it's something that makes sense for you, it doesn't hurt your business in any way. It potentially opens, you know, more avenues to making sales, then why not?
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's really something that I guess we never knew we always needed kind of thing, you know?
Exactly.
So you mentioned that, you know, you're working by yourself. What is it like to be a one-woman small business right now during, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdown, and even as you were saying with your studio, with shipping, receiving, all of that?
Well, right now, I'm going to be perfectly honest. It's stressful at times because a lot of the companies where I get my supplies from, they have been running low on stock for months. And since there's such an urgency for bottles, for alcohol, some of the things, even wax, I noticed that wax jumped up maybe, I think, $15 since a year ago. And wow. I think last year, whenever COVID first hit, I want to say that everyone was looking for an additional way to start making income. And I can't blame them. But you just had everybody trying to make everything. So people were running out of supplies, these big companies, and then they started putting a maximum on how much you can buy. So say if you could go in and buy 100 cases of jelly jars, right now the max is 50. At one time it was 10 cases. So I find myself sometimes panic buying, and I hate doing that because I have a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm just like, now I gotta sell. I gotta really push for online sales right now because I have so many cases of candle jars and containers and clamshell containers. So it forces me to panic buy. I don't like that. When I do have to personally run to the mailbox, the lines to ship products are longer. Some of my products have made it to the customers broken. The shipping times have went maybe from like 2 to 3 days to now, I think I want to say it's like 10 days.
Wow. Yeah. It's really a challenge. You know, it's like, these are the things that small businesses don't get credit for, you know, like when you think about the value of your time, and and your product and like the prices you're charging. Okay, well now everything, like literally every industry has raised their prices. Anything from construction to like what you're saying with the price of wax going up, everything has skyrocketed. It's hard to come by, you know, everyone's kind of fighting. You don't want to be panic buying, but at the same time, if you get an influx of orders, what do you do? Like, you just have to make sure that you're prepared. And then not only that, but waiting in line at the post office or wherever you're shipping from, that's taking away from your time that you could be in the studio making products. So it still is like, now how do you calculate the value of your time now that we're in the middle of this? Like, it's basically a crisis for small business.
Yes. And then one day I ran out of packing peanuts. So the Staples that I go to go get my packing peanuts, they were sold out of packing peanuts. And I've never seen this happen before for like 3 or 4 days. So I had to call another Staples that was like 30 minutes away, ask them to put it on hold. And they only had 3 packs, but I had to do what I had to do because I had orders to ship. So basically it's like every day you have to wing something in order to make it flow, like
to make it to make it work. Yeah, and then so then you're spending more in gas and travel time to get there, to get to this other store, you know, and maybe that store is in an area that has a higher percentage sales tax, or maybe they just in general charge more for that product. Or like, I've even looked around, not that I'm buying packing peanuts or anything, but I've looked at different websites, and maybe you're in a bind where the place you used to buy it from for like, you know, $10, they're out of stock. So now you have to go to the other guy for $20. And it's like, well, what choice do you have right now? And these are kind of the things, you know, when we think about small businesses and the different relief programs that are being offered, you know, the government is kind of slowly but surely working through to help small business. They don't really account for all that stuff.
They don't.
It's like, you have the option of like, okay, paycheck protection, or like, okay, well, we'll help you pay your utilities. But what about the cost of things going up? What about the like, just things that are happening as a result of where we're at?
Right, it's now a very awkward position to be in, but I'm actually blessed because my online sales have been pretty steady since the start of COVID. I want to say I've been more busier than normal. So yeah,
that's amazing. Like,
thank you God that I'm still able to make a living right now, because there's a lot of changes being made all around us constantly.
For sure. And I think it's just that people are stuck in their house all day, every day with the same people. And either they have young teenagers that smell bad, or they're just looking for something that like spruces up their house, you know, because I think people are kind of in that frame of mind where before they were spending so much time out of the house, they didn't think as much about like, well, what, how am I going to decorate this space? Or, you know, what kind of scent do I want this room to have? And now it's kind of cool that we do get to focus on that stuff. Not that I really wanted it to last the whole year, but
and you know what, when I went into my office, I wasn't allowed to burn a candle, and now I can at home. So
true,
big difference.
Yeah, I think people, you know, the silver lining to all of this is that people are going to not budge on the things that make them happy anymore. Yeah. Because now it's like, well, we've all proven ourselves that we all know how to work from home, and we can have things like burning a candle at our desk. Mm-hmm. So if that's what makes you happy, it makes you more productive, I think people are going to go for it.
I noticed that even the other day when it was snowing, I just lit like one of my summer fragrances. Like, this is really putting me in a much better mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And because this snow won't quit, I feel like you need something to put you in a better mood.
Speaking of products a little bit, if somebody was going to buy one thing from you, what would you recommend? Like, what's the either fan favorite or your favorite?
I would have to say my herbaceous lavender candle, whether it was in an 8-ounce jelly jar or either in a 25-ounce triple wick candle bowl. That's one of my favorites from the beginning. That scent, everyone loves it. I love it. It's so soothing and relaxing. Lavender, period, is just a good lavender. This particular lavender.
She's speaking my language.
Kim's eyes are lighting up.
This particular lavender. I love
lavender.
It.
It's like, it's universal. I think everybody likes lavender. How can you not like
clean.
Lavender?
Yeah, I just true. Love lighting that lavender candle.
That's amazing. We all need to relax a little with everything that's going on. So what are some other ideas or tips that you can share with small business makers? You've covered so much between marketing, you know, your products, studio space, Afterpay, everything. But, you've been such a wealth of information. Maybe there is something else that we can pull from you.
I would want to say, I wrote down like a list. So in addition to doing your own research, make sure you find like your target audience. Cause a lot of people, they get into business thinking that everyone is their customer and everyone is not your customer. You have to focus on like your target audience and continuously engage them. I want to say, ensure your business. Make sure that you own your name, form your LLC or your incorporation. And then a few other things that I jotted down was photo collabs. The pictures that you see on my website, those were all done whenever I ship products out to photographers for free. And then they took the pictures and then I got to use them on my website and or I get to use them for marketing purposes. That saved me a ton of money. And I actually found a lot of groups that I use. I actually found groups on Facebook. So a lot of small business owners, they don't want to get on Facebook to find these groups or these communities. And I actually found those groups and communities through Facebook to be very beneficial in regards to my business. I still actually clock into, I log into Facebook maybe once a day to see what's going on within the groups to see if I can either offer input or either gain knowledge from those groups. Those have actually been very beneficial to me. Network with other makers. I found that whenever I do a vendor show or a pop-up or anything, I'll write down like the date, the time, the location. I'll jot down things as far as like the traffic, how much money I made. And I noticed that whenever I passed along those tips or like my little graph that I use, I pass it along to anybody that would basically not give me conversation, but say if you're sitting next to me at a pop-up, I'll say, hey, did you hear about this show? And they would say no. And I would just share with them my list. And I actually found out about you guys through a show that I did in Philadelphia. It was a gentleman, I think his name is Steven, and he does watercolor paint. Yes, he told me about you guys. So that's how I found out about you guys, through him. Yeah, you have to network with other makers. Don't be nervous. I mean, some people are willing to share, some people are not. I've always been one of those people. I want to see everyone win. So if I know about a good show that I think maybe you could benefit from, and maybe you don't sell candles, maybe you do something else, I'm going to tell you that information so you can maybe apply and also go there and meet other makers as well.
Absolutely.
That's such a good idea. Yeah. I always hear. Grass. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I always hear like people saying, oh, what are the last couple of shows you did and how were they? And you actually have like a handy page you can pop out to be like, here's all the details. Like, take it.
Yes,
take
some it as I put like an X, I wrote it down. X next to them. Like, I wouldn't do that one if I was you. Maybe because I.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I love that level of organization. It's amazing. So you said a whole bunch of really great things. You know, first you started off with saying like knowing your audience. And one of the things that I think is hardest for makers, as you were saying, you know, you're getting started, you're thinking, oh, everyone's going to want my product. But then you get the rejection. You get a rejection in whatever form. Your product's too expensive. I can buy this somewhere else. I can make this myself. And then suddenly we kind of like get really in our heads and kind of shut down, you know. And we talked about this earlier too, where, you know, sometimes family or significant others are the ones that drive you to shut down. Sometimes that's that feedback that you get from a customer. And then you're like, well, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my product? No, you're not going to be right for everyone. And that's okay. Because as the sooner you can figure that out and kind of narrow down who your audience really is, the sooner you're going to attract more people that are your target demographic and that do appreciate your product. It's kind of like, you know, your vibe, right? Like then you're just at a higher vibe and then you're going to get more people that really appreciate you. And so it's not you, it's them almost. It's like, you have to kind of think of it like a breakup and it's a beneficial one. Yeah,
that's what I was trying to explain. I tell this to anybody that is thinking about starting a business, never lower your prices to like undercut your competitors. You have to come up with what you feel like your products are worth and just put them out there. Cause I see a lot of people getting into every industry and they'll be trying to undercut you to get your customers. But just because we may be selling the same product, they might not be your audience. So you really have to focus on your target audience. If you're selling your candles for $50, don't lower your price just to undercut your competition, thinking that you're going to get more sales because you may only get one sale versus focusing on your target audience and getting returning sales all the time.
Right. It's going to be maybe a little bit more work up front to figure out where you belong. But there is a place within any, you know, with for anyone, for any maker, it's just a matter of finding that market, finding that customer. You know, if people will pay hundreds and thousands of dollars for sneakers, like you'll find it. You just have to do the research to find who's going to buy your candles for that price without lowering it. It's like knowing your worth.
Yeah, I would have to. I agree with you in regards to that, because I'll pay, like, say if someone's selling something for like $200, if I really want that and I really am and I really want to support that brand, regardless of how much it is, I'm going to support that brand.
Yeah, definitely. And I love, you know, like you were saying with keeping notes, sharing that with other makers is so important. It is as many makers as there are. And even though there may be, you know, thousands of candle makers in the US, I think it's still a tight knit community. And it actually is kind of a really small world how people meet each other in this community and how they're all connected. And, you know, similar to finding the right customers, when you find the right like artist collaborators and like those friends that you make through the vendor circuit, those are your people. They're going to steer you in the right direction. So, you know, you're saying you met Steven. We absolutely love him. He's become a dear friend of ours, actually. And, you know, it's just a matter of treating people the way you want to be treated and understanding that at the end of the day, for Kevin and I as promoters, our customers aren't just the people that are walking through the door to shop. It's also the makers, because that's how people are going to find out about us, and people are going to determine if it's even worth their time to come to us. And that goes across, because when the vendors are happy, when the makers are happy and they're having a good time and they're taken care of, the rest of it all falls into place.
Yes. When I gave a girl my list before, I want to say like 2 years ago, she had gave me free products. She was selling something, but she was like, I want you to have these free products. She was like, because no one has ever just, she was like, you don't even know me. She was like, and you just gave me this graph. She was like, you just gave me this graph. I feel like I need to do something as a small token of my appreciation. And I think we still follow each other and still give each other tips here and now on like what shows to do. Or before COVID had started, we were supposed to go down to the Cherry Blossom Festival in DC. She had told me about that. So yeah, it's all about pinging ideas and getting within the right group of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
See, that you'll little token.
And she'll never forget that. And then I'll never forget what she did for me as well in regards to giving me her products.
So cool. That's such a good story. So for everybody that wants to find you online
and get your graph
and get an emailed presentation. No, I'm kidding. Where can everybody find you online, both your website and your social media?
My website is amazingessenceonline.com. I'll repeat it again, amazingessenceonline.com. And on Instagram, I'm _amazingessence.
Very cool. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great.
Thank you, Adrian. It was so great to chat with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Business Handmade podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at MarketSpace Vendor Events or on our website, MarketSpaceVendorEvents.com.